Hello, everybody, and welcome to the special Thousand Suns-themed podcast at LPAssociation.com. My name is Derek, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow LP Association staff members Joe, Keaton, Lewis, Luke, and Todd. Today, we also have some special members with us today, somebody from the LP Association forums. Most of you might know him as Minus. Today, we'll be referring to him as Casey. Say hello, Minus.
Hello, everyone.
Absolutely. So over the next over the next 2 hours or so, what we will be discussing is several different topics related to Linkin Park's new album, A Thousand Suns. Over the next couple hours, you'll hear our opinions on the album, what we would like to see from the live shows, and also other things related to the new album. So without further ado, I would like to start the discussion on the album. We will be going on a track-by-track basis. What we'll do is that we'll put the first two songs together. So that way it kind of doesn't seem like we're going over one-minute songs. But yes, who would like to begin?
Well, this is Joe. How's it going, chat, LPA members? First, before, I just want to kind of know, like, who actually went out and bought the album and kind of who kind of ordered it. Like, what was everybody's kind of first experience kind of listening to the album and how that went?
Oh, it was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, because obviously it leaked, obviously, like, which I was pretty impressed with the kind of amount of time it kind of took for it to leak. I mean, this is probably one of the albums in kind of recent memory that's been so big where it's kind of not leaked kind of really early on. And I think that kind of really helped me kind of, because if it, like, can't say if it kind of leaks like 2 weeks before it was meant to come out, I probably would have been a bit apprehensive to kind of listen to it, but a couple of days, I did listen to the leak, and I'd like to say it didn't really diminish my kind of my listening to it. I kind of got everything out of it when I kind of laid down, just kind of took it all in. Yeah, it was great. I was kind of really impressed on first listen. Obviously, it was a bit different, but yeah, it was really enjoyable. Sorry, Lewis.
Oh, no problem. So, hello, everyone. My name is Lewis, the newest member of staff. I just wanted to comment on
congratulations, Lewis.
I wanted to comment on my perspective of the release of the new album, and it was that I personally thought that the lead up and the whole hype was very, very cool and with the messages and everything. But my small problem was that they started leaking intentionally putting out 3 or 4 songs before the album actually came out. And, you know, for one, to have the catalyst out for one was okay because, I mean, you have to have a single out. But to have, you know, Wretches and Kings and then Waiting for the End and then Blackout, those were things that I felt, I guess maybe for some people might have, you know, taken down the hype of it. I mean, for me, at least, it wasn't really a problem because I never really paid too much attention to that. But I can definitely say that my first experience with the album was really just out of this world. I guess, you know, did what Joe did, sort of slide down and let myself fall into it.
I think that was really, like, smart promoting by Warner and Linkin Park. But I'd kind of arranged it so that certain radio stations all around the world would have, like, a different song from the album leading up to its release. Because, obviously, they knew it was going to leak in that week with it coming out in Germany and Austria on a Friday. So to kind of legally distribute those songs as a means of kind of, you know, kind of stepping in the way of the leak and kind of people listening to it that way. I thought it was really good promotion because that way they did it legally. They kind of got the album out there, at least half of it. And I think Warner's promotion this time around and has been really spot on, like, in terms of getting, like, the album.
I think in terms of, like, the songs that they had released and in the order that they released them in, it was kind of like there was really nothing to kind of base what we could actually hear from the album, because we came out with Catalyst first, and whenever the Catalyst came out, we were all kind of expecting, like, a kind of, like, Pendulum, Inner Party System kind of album. And then after that, Wretches and Kings comes out, and it's like a throwback to old, like, Meteora, Hyper Theory days with the dirtiest beat I've ever heard in my life. And then, right, like, I think it was the day that the leak actually happened, Waiting for the End came out, and that was completely far left field compared to everything else. So really, even though so many songs ended up getting released before the leak or the actual album coming out, there was no way to kind of like expect what all the other songs would sound like other than the track descriptions that we got.
Absolutely.
That was probably the weirdest thing about the new album, is that a lot in the past with Linkin Park records, you know, although I always liked them all the same, you almost could kind of get an idea of how the record was going to sound from the first single. Like from Minutes to Midnight, when What I've Done came out, you kind of had an idea that it was going to kind of be like, you know, maybe like a soft rock or classic rock styled album just because of the sound. But what was really weird about The Catalyst when it came out is that, like, I think it was Lewis who said it, or even Joe, it had like an Inner Party System / Pendulum style sound to it, and everybody thought that we were going to have an album that was going to sound exactly like that. And then a couple of weeks later, you know, we started hearing Wretches and Kings that was, you know, completely different. So this is one record that I tried really hard not to listen to the leak before it came out. Unfortunately, you know, I was so excited over this record that instead of waiting until the CD came out, I did listen to the leak. And, you know, I just remember the first time I listened to it, it just completely blew me away how much of a complete 180 it was for the band. It didn't sound like anything they had done before. And, you know, like Joe said, you know, Warner Brothers' lead up to the album was absolutely fantastic. I mean, not only was the message campaign absolutely genius, but, you know, nobody knew how this album was going to sound before it came out. And I think, at least for me, you know, picking it up from Best Buy the day of release and actually listening to it on my speakers, it was a completely radical experience for me. I never expected that the band would sound like this, and I'm personally in love with the record. I think it's a great record.
I just want to go back to when we all did get the album and like talk about how many songs people listened to before they listened to the album, because I was like really adamant that I didn't listen to the 30-second clips that came out the day before. I didn't listen to any other song besides The Catalyst, and I listened to Wretches and Kings. I mean, we got the ESPN snippet first, which I had to record and rip myself. I mean, I didn't even want to listen to that, but I had to kind of post it on the LPA's news, which is kind
it's
of
crazy
really
considering yeah, you were posting all the news for the 1,000 Suns, like leading up to the leak, and you couldn't listen yeah, or read is any of the press releases that you were having
yeah,
to post.
I didn't want to read the interviews or anything. I'm there, like, copying and pasting them, like, trying to glance at it through, like, squinty eyes to see if it's actually worth posting. The best one was when we got the exclusive Burning in the Skies 90-second clip. I had to, like, rip it for myself. So I'm ripping it. I've got my speakers turned down low. And I'm like, really don't want to listen to this? And I'm, like, there trying to post it on the LP. Like, oh, my God, I really don't want to press play. So,
I mean, I have to give you a round of applause, Joe. I mean, and you did an absolutely fantastic job this album cycle. I mean, I don't want to embarrass you or congratulate you on the air, but I mean, if there's anybody who did like perfect in obtaining these clips, you did a really good job, Joe. But I mean, it was difficult for me too, because I didn't want to listen to songs before it came out. And
yeah,
I mean, it was hard.
It was hard. I mean, I went into the album only listening to The Catalyst and Wretches and Kings. I didn't listen to Waiting for the End or anything else, and I was really pleased with my kind of experience of listening to it. I think it really helped, like, especially without listening to the clips, I had no preconceptions about what the songs were going to be like, and yeah, it was I really enjoyed my first listen. It was
sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just remember when Minutes to Midnight came out, and I kind of feel like the whole experience of listening to this was just a bit more above that, but carry on, Liz.
Yeah, I feel like I
I'd like to add to that. But,
oh yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Hey
everyone. Sorry, I wasn't in the last podcast, but I'm in this one. Lewis, yeah, do you want to continue or?
Oh no, go ahead. You should speak. Definitely.
Okay, thanks, man. Well, like basically, I'd just like to add to what these guys are saying. It's always like quite difficult to kind of stop yourself from listening to a leak, especially you know, when you're like a member of you know, the Linkin Park Association forum, especially if you're like a moderator or a staff member on that site. But you know, I actually kind of tried to stop myself, like the others, from listening to the leak, and I actually gave in a couple of days before the app dropped. And one thing I kind of picked up on straight away is that the Catalyst, you know, when it first hit the radio, it seemed to me to be more of, you know, it seemed strange to me that we got the track listing that the Catalyst was, you know, one of the ending tracks. You know, it kind of,
yeah,
it was definitely meant to be like the end of the journey of the album as opposed to the start of a disc. For example, you know, What I've Done and Somewhere I Belong and One Step Closer, they all kind of like, they couldn't set a tone, yeah, for the album. Whereas I feel like kind of with the Catalyst was actually one of the more different songs on the album.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, we all, you know, everyone here kind of agrees that, you know, we were expecting a more kind of, you know, quote, those bands mentioned Pendulum in a Party System, but, you know, we've just kind of got a different array of kind of influences in this record. And I think it's turned out to be a really, really good record. And I think when you look back on the careers of the band members, you know, this, you know, Thousand Suns and Hybrid Theory will be the two kind of main albums that you look at in the defining careers of the band.
I agree.
Yeah, definitely. Well put. Definitely. That pretty much sums up everything I kind of think as well. So
I have to apologize if I was mumbling there a little bit, because like, I've never done anything like this before. I'm kind of nervous.
Yeah, just in case the chat aren't aware, this is Luke, fellow staff member. He wasn't here on the first podcast, but he's here for round two. It's good to have him here. Fellow Englishman like me. Woo! I'm not alone.
And just one last thought. I just want to say that even though there were the 30-second clips, admittedly, I did listen to those quite a bit. But even the 30-second clips, I can't say were enough. I mean, even when I listened to the full album after having listened to those clips, I was still pretty shocked. And I don't think the clips were, at least, you know, I didn't really get any really preconceived notions because they were just so small. Like, even the 30-second clip of, say, the Requiem, it only had that opening, like, you know, the eerie feeling. It didn't give you the part where, you know, the girl voice comes in, and that is even more eerie within itself. So I just think the 30-second clips, regardless, you know, didn't really change my perspective of the
album. Going off on that, how about we start the rundown of the album, starting with the Requiem? I mean, that's a pretty good place to start. Like, what did everyone think of the opening track? And
I guess I'll go first. When the track came on, the first time I heard it, I had not even listened to the 30-second preview of it. So I had no idea, really, on how it was going to sound. So, I mean, I liked the way the piano came in very quietly. I thought that was nice. But it was, I really knew as soon as, you know, the eerie-sounding ooze, if you will, came on, I knew that it was going to be a really different-sounding album from there, just because it's a really, really good indication of just how different the album was going to sound. And I thought that it was a good way to really set up the album. I thought it was also interesting when Mike revealed in an interview a couple of days after the album came out that, if you guys didn't know this, that song, The Requiem, is basically made up of different parts of the entire album. So, yeah, like, for example, you hear Chester's scream from Blackout. You hear the swooshing sounds from the beginning of Burning in the Skies. Basically, it combines the whole album, and I didn't know that. That made me appreciate the track more. But I actually really like the way Mike manipulated his voice and made it sound like the girl, because that was something really daring and different for the band, and I think it gives the whole song like a really eerie feeling. Like, even though it's only an interlude, it's probably one of my favorite tracks on the album.
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree on all your points. I mean, when I read that quote about it being kind of made up of sounds from the album, it really made me appreciate the track a lot more. But I think it's a really epic opener. It builds, and then especially how it kind of segues into the Radiance, which I hear a lot of people say, you know, those two should have been one on track, and I'm not so sure of that. What do you guys think?
Personally, I
actually tend to agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if I do, you know.
Well, I mean, the way I see it with the whole splitting of the track, it's because they, the two tracks are supposed to be apart because only the Requiem uses stuff from the other tracks. And The Radiance is just the quote with a different instrumentation, so that's why they're split to me.
Yeah, I suppose it's pretty mute kind of discussing it anyway. It isn't intended to be kind of one track anyway, so not the whole entire album. But, yeah.
I don't know. My first impression of the Requiem was like, okay, when the ooze started coming in, was I just thought it sounded so much like Muse to me. And of course, if everyone who knows me very well knows I love that band quite a bit.
Woo!
But that was I got chills at that moment, and then as soon as it got to the girl singing, I couldn't even describe. I'm definitely okay with it being separate tracks because, like someone was just saying, the instrumentation is different going into the next track, and I feel that track in itself is a different mood in a way because of the quote instead of the Requiem. The Requiem was eerie, and then the Radiance, you're listening to something that's very deep and very powerful. You don't really realize it. And I suggest also before I end this. If you haven't seen the video of Robert Oppenheimer speaking that quote, you should watch it because it makes this song a lot more eerie when you listen to it. And so that's all I have to say about the Requiem.
Yes. I really enjoyed how it kind of opened with Burning Into the Skies, which, like the full first track on the album. I know they've kind of spoke about it in interviews and said, oh yeah, this was obviously a different approach. We didn't want to start with like a meaty riff and kind of, kick people in the face. We just kind of wanted to do it in another way. And I think it's like a really understated song, which I couldn't really think of a better track to start the album. I think the way it starts is really perfect. I think it's a great opener.
Yeah.
What's everybody's opinion on Burning in the Skies? I mean, what do you people think? I like it's all.
All right. Well, I guess I'll start there. Burning in the Skies, I think, is the perfect track to start with. It's a soft feel to it, and I really like it because you just sort of your first taste, like you said, Joe, isn't this hard. Like guitars breaking in. The first taste you got, Meteora, is like Don't Stay, and then Minutes to Midnight was Given Up, and it's just, you don't really get that feel with Burning in the Skies. And I like the mix up because the first voice you hear on this album is actually Mike singing, and I think that's a big change up for a lot of the fans because you're used to just hearing either Mike rapping to start the album, or you're used to hearing Chester's that raspy voice of his, but it's just Mike's soft voice. And I really like how that whole song builds up and it starts the album flawlessly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like the beginning of Burning in the Skies, where Mike actually starts singing, seems like completing the circle with how I actually started listening to LP live. Like, I went to Summer Sanitarium, actually the show that they filmed live in Texas. And remember getting blown away by Mike singing and pushing me away. What's this? I don't understand what's going on. And then watching that progress into like singing one song that, some people kind of have varied opinions of in between Minutes to Midnight and then No Roads Left. And then finally hearing him sing like with like all of the sound that he deserves, like actually having a verse to himself in a song and then just knowing straight there that Mike Shinoda is actually singing on the album, and it's not like some kind of like whole thing like that. And I also want to say, even though this is going backwards, I did see a comment from Jason say in the chat where he said Michelle Shinoda, and I decided to bring that up. That should be official. We should call him Michelle Shinoda for the Requiem. But back to Burning in the Skies, the guitar part for that song, like before it even comes in heavy after the second chorus, the like cymbal, like single note part that's going on like right before the verse and during the verse, I enjoy that part so much. I have no idea why, just because it's something that you don't see Linkin Park do in terms of having the guitar under, like not being the main focal point of the song, but rather being the underlying texture of the song, which is something we see a lot in A Thousand Suns.
Well, I just want to add to that just kind of quickly, is just like you said that, you know, songs like Don't Stay and, you know, One Step Closer and Giving Up, they all kind of set the tone of the tempo for the album. With this one, I think that's it, my mistake. But yeah, you say they kind of set the kind of feel for the album, but I think the band were kind of like on a mission to make sure they'd broken that kind of cycle, kind of, because yeah, this song Burning in the Sky is kind of, you know, I wouldn't say it's a soft song, but you know, it's yeah. got that kind of down tempo kind of verse to it, and you know, it yeah. doesn't really get heavy until later on in the song. And I think it was a very intentional thing by the band to kind of
yeah.
break the mold and do something like that, especially with Mike singing, you know, the verses, and you know, doing, you know, having a much more kind of vocal presence, you know, especially for this in this song, but through the album throughout. So I think, in a way, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I could just like following up what you and Miner said, like with the way Mike sings the verses. Because like it was obviously a very notable thing, at least for me. You know, when you kind of sung on kind of Minutes to Midnight and songs like you know, In Between, you know, you was really conscious about Mike singing. You was like, oh my god, Mike singing on a song. And then, you know, it's pretty weird with A Thousand Suns, because you know, this track starts with Mike singing, and you know, I never really thought twice. You know, I didn't think, oh, this is Mike singing, this is weird. You know, it just all felt so natural. It never even crossed my mind until after I've listened to the whole thing, that, wait a minute, Mike was the first person weird on this album. So that's a statement in itself.
Well, yeah, it is.
Go ahead.
No, go on.
Well, what I'm really surprised about, I mean, everyone's talking about how different it was for Mike to sing, which I agree, but definitely what really just jumps out to me more than anything, I really think that lyrically, this is one of the best songs the band has ever written. The metaphors that are in this song are just very different than what you heard from Linkin Park records. Like, not to criticize the old stuff, but you know, especially on some of the later albums that followed Hybrid Theory, a lot of times they would almost seemingly resort to the easiest metaphor, like pain or lies. And with this song, you know, just the whole metaphor about, you know, swimming through the smoke, you know, the bridges I have burned, you know, plus my favorite lyric from that. And sorry if you guys hear distortion in my voice, by the way. There must be something wrong with my connection. I apologize. Hopefully it stops. But apparently it sounds like I'm failing at auto-tune. So if that's the case, I do apologize. I don't know what's wrong with my connection, but one of my favorite lyrics in the entire song was when Mike sings, in the end, we were meant to be apart in separate chambers of the human heart. I think that lyric was beautiful. It's probably one of my favorite lyrics on the album. But since my connection sucks and I sound like I'm singing an autotune, I'm going to go ahead and pass the thing on to... Well, weren't you about to say something, Luke? I'm going to pass it back on to you, so.
Oh, no, I'm good, man. I'm good. Pass it on to someone else.
How about we just jump on to the next track, which is, guys, Empty Spaces.
All right. I'll go first on this track, because this track, it resonates with me quite a bit. When I listen to albums, you know, there's always that one song that really it sticks to me. Like I can remember back to Hybrid Theory. You know, for me that was In the End, and then on Meteora it was Somewhere I Belong. Minutes to Midnight it was Shadow of the Day. Those songs would just get stuck in my head after the initial listen. And on this album in particular, it was Empty Spaces. I could not get over the crickets. Every time I heard crickets outside, I could not stop thinking of Empty Spaces. And those 18 seconds, I think, are the definitive moments on this album. And it is the most crucial interlude of this entire album. And I really hope that everyone who listens to this album can understand the significance of this track. And you know, if you're thinking to yourself, well, what about Wisdom, Justice, and Love? What about Jornada del Muerto? No, I don't think it's any of those interludes that make this album. It's Empty Spaces, hands down, the best track on this entire album. It's definitive of A Thousand Suns. And that's all I have to say on Empty Spaces.
There's just a lot of emotion in this track. Personally, like when Brad comes in and starts doing the, you know, the commander talk, and when he's screaming to the other people on the battlefield, you know, it feels like I'm actually in the battlefield itself. I mean, every time I hear the song, I just start to cry because it just gets me so emotional. It's just such a beautiful track, and I just really think that, you know, Linkin Park really put all their emotion in this track, and I just think it's beautiful. I mean, if there was a song after Waiting for the End that I think should be the next single, it's this track. I mean, who the fuck cares if it's 18 seconds? I mean, this is the best 18 seconds I've ever heard in my life. It's an amazing track.
Yeah, like going off of how Linkin Park are kind of like throwing off the radio-friendly curve. Like they threw The Catalyst as the first single, which, you know, in terms of structure, that song is completely different than what you hear in the radio. If they put Empty Spaces out as a single, that is making a really, really big statement about, you know, what they believe to be, like, the whole single material preconcepted notion. They definitely should put it out as a single. It's a very emotionally powerful track. And if I actually, out of all the tracks, as much as I love it, though, I do have a few complaints about it. First off, I really do think there should have been more crickets. I understand it's for ambiance and that, you know, you need to kind of ease into the next track, but really, in terms of the power that you get throughout each track in the album, Empty Spaces has so much more power than When They Come For Me. And really, I honestly think that it probably would have fit better replacing the speech in Wretches and Kings, because that song seems like something that would follow Empty Spaces in terms of power, because When They Come For Me, it just doesn't cover it. But I do agree with you, Derek, in that it should be the next single, and I believe I'm done with what I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't enough. You know, I mean, if we could have more crickets on the track, I think it would have been a better track. But seriously, with that in mind, you know, now that we just talked about this absolutely perfect track, now we're going to go on to When They Come For Me. That track in particular, what really struck me as interesting is just how differently the entire song sounded to the rest of the album. It's one of the most experimental tracks I've ever heard the band attempt. You know, not just the electronic beginning of the song, but the whole fact that once it really gets into the verse, you know, hearing the tribal drums in the chorus and almost Middle Eastern vocals in the chorus and bridge, I think the track itself is just absolutely wonderful. But seriously, I mean, it's one of my favorite tracks on the album. I also think it's really interesting how Mike almost kind of calls out the critics in the first verse of the song. It was a really courageous thing for Mike to do lyrically, because I mean, the critics and the radio stations are really, you know, not trying to criticize Linkin Park, they're an amazing band, but you know, these are the stations that made the band popular and, you know, got their music out there. And you know, Mike's basically saying in the first chorus, you know, basically deal with it, or you know, try the catch up, motherfucker. You know, Heinz number 57.
Well, you couldn't resist making that joke.
I couldn't.
Wow.
Go ahead, Joe.
It's pretty interesting, because when I first heard this song, you know, I saw a lot of people kind of talking about how it was like their favorite track on the album. You know, this is the kind of the standout song. And I never really got that on my first listen. But it's definitely grown on me. Like, the more I've listened to it, it has now become one of the, like, the best tracks on the album. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just kind of the drastic kind of drum-ridden sound that it kind of started with, kind of kept through. But, yeah, I mean, you pretty much touched on it. I mean, the lyrics and everything about it is just great. And I really can't wait to hear this song live out of any song on the album besides Blackout. I think When They Come For Me is going to be so great live. Can't wait to hear it.
Absolutely. I just want to comment on Joe's thing as well, is that I had the exact same, I guess, pattern in terms of how I felt about the song. When I first heard the song, I mean, I wasn't, to be honest with you, I wasn't a big fan at all. It just starts out with that, bom, bom. It was like, what? You know, I didn't quite understand. And as it went along, I started to get it a little bit more. But by the end of the track, I wasn't really sure of what I thought. And the more I listened to this track, I realized that there's so much brilliance in this track. For number one, it doesn't really have a chorus. You know, it's not the usual structure. And I think this can really be applied to most, if not all, the tracks. Not that Linkin Park does not follow their that structure that everyone is used to. And so that, I think, When They Come For Me is an epitome of that. Second of all, the song builds beautifully. It starts out with just, you know, verses, and it just gets louder and louder. And as soon as Chester comes in, it leads in, it is an incredible crescendo. And then it starts to die down a little bit, and you hear the background that you heard in Empty Spaces with Brad, you know, speaking Spanish. And then you think that the track is going to end, and then it just goes into this mad part with Middle Eastern sounds and vocals. And I just thought it was absolutely incredible how that song ends and leads in, you know, the next track. And just by far one of my favorite songs on this album is definitely When They Come For Me, for sure.
I'd like to just add to that and just say that I agree with the guys when they say that they weren't immediately, you know, they didn't immediately have any affection for the song straight off. Wow. And I was exactly like that, because, you know, it, to me, the intro was, you know, I'm all for the experimentation in the music and everything, but the intro to the song was very, it was too unorthodox for my liking. You know, it just goes straight into, you know, that kind of heavy electronic sound. And it just kind of, it was like a wall of noise to me. But, you know, the song itself, when it gets into it, I actually learned to kind of, you know, the intro became a part of, it kind of, you know, it transitioned into the song well in the end for my listening. And, you know, one thing I was quite glad to hear is the band experimenting with different drum patterns, because Midnight, we had Handheld High, so we had the kind of marching band kind of drums.
Yeah.
And on New Divide, you had the kind of toms in the verses, and I'm really glad that they kind of brought in that kind of tribal-esque kind of feel to the song in the drums. And I think I remember hearing Chester say in a recent interview that that he's actually going to be playing some percussion in the live setup because of the nature of When They Come For Me, because there's so many different drum patterns going on in one song. And you know, the chorus itself, I mean, not that there's a typical kind of chorus in there, but the vocals in that kind of part where the chorus would be, I think it's effective just to have that kind of, you know, calling out vocal. You know, it will make for such a great live kind of feel.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And I think you know, seeing a crowd of, you know, thousands just singing that will be, you know, it just goes to show you don't even need kind of lyrics to make a good song. All you need is, you know, the good experimental kind of mindset to, you know, try something new. And I think When They Come For Me is really the kind of the definition of experimental and the kind of new Linkin Park. I mean, you know, even in Mike's rap, you know, he's saying, you know, this is the new band, and you kind of have to accept it, because, you know, they're not going to go back to Hybrid Theory. They're not going to go back to the ER. And I think that was the real kind of message in this song. And I'm really glad that they've you know, kind of stepped up their efforts to put that through to everyone, because, you know, certainly as a kind of a staff member on a Linkin Park Association, you often hear people saying they need to go back to their old sound. You know, they just need to, people just need to accept that, you know, this is how the band is now. And, you know, I think When They Come For Me was a song that was telling everyone that exact message, and it's time for people to accept it.
Yeah.
Well, for When They Come For Me, I actually, going off of what Luke said about how Chester in an interview said that he was going to be playing percussion live, actually brought to mind an idea that I had, especially since Chester had said that in When They Come For Me, there are like five different tribal drum patterns going on in the song. There's I listen to a lot of music, and there's a band called Jane's Addiction, which is actually pretty big, that their song is called Chip Away. Whenever they play it live, everyone in the band is on drums except for the vocalist. And that's something I see Linkin Park doing with When They Come For Me, which is like, you know, have everyone except for, I believe, I would say Mike and maybe Joe on drums for the first part of the song, with everyone else on, you know, gang vocals for the chorus, with everyone else singing, with the audience singing along as well. And then from there, slowly kind of, I guess, I really don't know how it would work out using like a loop pedal or something like that for the drums, as they start adding in more instruments, like guitar starts coming in, they had to start sampling strings for the second part of the chorus. Apparently everyone's quoting the Bed Intruder song, but yeah, there's a lot of possibility with the song live that I see very exciting, with the crowd interaction, especially with how epic the chorus gets once all the instruments come in after Chester's vocal part saying, "When they come for me, when they come for me, I'll be gone." I really am excited to see this song live. Like, out of all the songs on the album, this song is probably going to be the live breaker for me in terms of A Thousand Suns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think No Brain's End was pretty good too. Like, I think he did a good job.
Yeah, I did quite like the ending. A lot of people probably won't even pick up on that, but yeah, I agree.
That's all I wanted to say.
Cool. Next track, Derek. Go.
Okay, with Robot Boy, this track, in my opinion, is probably the most, besides When They Come For Me, I think this is probably one of the most chancy tracks on the album. It is really different from what Linkin Park has done in the past. Not only the whole, you know, repetitive lyrics, but just the style of the song. It completely distanced itself from the rest of the album. When I first heard it, I wasn't sure if I really liked it because of the fact that it was, you know, a bit repetitive. The lyrics kind of, you know, went over and over again over time. But really, you know, yeah, like Sora said in the chat, you know, it doesn't really have any real chorus or verse. And that, in my opinion, is what makes the track so special, because, like Linkin Park said in the past, they used to go by an intro, verse, chorus, you know, verse, bridge, chorus, outro style. And with this song itself, it doesn't have any of that at all. It's basically a really different song. It almost feels like in some spots like an interlude. It almost feels like it's an interlude, but it's not. I like the way they sing in it. I think it's going to sound really good live. I also like how, kind of unexpected towards the end of the song, it really picks up and, you know, Chester starts singing, you know, screaming in the background. That part, in my opinion, is really, really intense. And, you know, like Ace of Spades in the chat, I feel what makes Robot Boy great is the fact it doesn't have any of what we come to expect from Linkin Park. I mean, Linkin Park, we were talking for months before the record came out that it was going to sound different. And not only did it sound different, I mean, this song is the epitome of them basically throwing the old rule book out the window. I think it's an absolutely excellent song itself. Joe, what did you think?
if one song was going to get like some hot discussion in the chat, I know it would be this one. Like, people seem so divided on it, but I think I actually do see more people who just do not like the song than people who do. It's a weird song for me. I don't really hate it, but again, it's not really, you know, one of the standout tracks on the album for me. I mean, it might change. I think it's one of those songs you kind of need to listen to in a certain state of mind or if you're in a certain mood. It definitely, I won't say it stands alone, but you know, it's probably the track on A Thousand Suns that gets the most like discussion. And as a personal opinion, I do like it. I really like the ending where, you know, you're hearing Chester in the background, and you know, it's like, seems like there's like so many layers to this song. And I think it's one of those songs you really need to listen to with monitors or in ear headphones or something, you know, to get the full effect. But it is a good song, you know, and I do like it, but it's not one of my favorites. But I think it'll be interesting to see them perform it live, you know. I don't know if they will. I don't know if they'll put it into the cycle. I'm sure they will. I mean, I imagine they'll play every song off the album in the upcoming tour, but it's definitely going to be one of the songs I look to see them play live. And I think a lot of other people will be as well, because I think, you know, if they're not really into this song, they might have like pretty low preconceptions about hearing it. You know, might not be one of the favorite tracks they want to hear. But hopefully hearing it live can change some people's opinions, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Robot Boy, to me, it's one of those songs that I don't really think you can pull it out on its own and just listen to it. It's, you know, you have those, what they said, there's like 9 like official full songs on this album. And I think that one in particular is just one of those songs that it doesn't belong out of the context. And the way I see this song is that, well, first of all, my first impression was simply that I started hearing the piano and I was like, oh gosh, this is going to be really cheesy. And as soon as all the rest of the instrumentation started coming in, I started to get the feel for it. And by the end of the song, I really did like it. My first impression when Chester started coming in at the end with those sort of exclamations in the background, my first thought was like, oh, he totally ripped off Bono there. But at the same time, it was just so cool the way it fit in with the rest of the track and how it just sort of helps the build of it. And the second thing I noticed was that this is one of those tracks that, to me, you know, like Derek said, how it was somewhat repetitive. It really reminded me of like a Kid A song off like Radiohead, and how the structure of the song, it's not about, you know, having a different lyric every time. It's not about having a thing that's just like, you know, I'm trying to think of the word. It's not like always something new. It's repeated lyrics and repeated structures. And that's something that Kid A was like really, that really defined Radiohead's Kid A. And so I thought that this was really Linkin Park's take on song off that album with the repetitive structure. And I think that, you know, it's not my favorite track overall, but it's definitely one of those tracks that, to me, it definitely fits in with the entire context of the record. And it does belong there, whether or not you think it's a good track or not. It belongs in this album.
Definitely.
Well, I'd like to agree with everyone and just say that, you know, it's not my favorite song off the album, but I don't hate it or anything like that. I think it's an okay track. I mean, once the synth solo comes into it, I think it kind of goes from strength to strength. So for example, the repetitive kind of nature of the song it builds up to that synth solo, and the outro is actually very effective, you know, for the tone of the song. So, you know, hearing Chester, you know, scream in the kind of background, I do really like that effect. But I do agree with Lewis, and I will say that, you know, I don't think I'd ever kind of or would rarely kind of go and listen to A Thousand Suns and put that song on first or anything like that, or you know, pick it out in a playlist or something like that. So, you know, I generally agree. It's a decent song, but and it does definitely deserve a place on the album, because I think it does kind of belong in the same kind of tone. But it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
Well, I've been reading some of the comments in the chat, and apparently there was some sort of dispute, I guess, between some people about why it was called Robot Boy. I like clear up that it was a a working title, as we did see that title back when Mike was blogging about the making of the album. And I'm going to have to go in contrary of everyone else. This is probably one of my favorite tracks of the album in terms of how the album fits as a whole. I'll stick to my actual... Yeah, I really enjoy the song. Just the... I really don't know how I'd explain it, just the fact that it's a constantly changing instrumentation over a repetitive vocal, but the vocal does so much for me. On top of that, the lyrics, this is the first time chronologically in an album that we've seen Linkin Park address the actual word love. It's used elsewhere in other songs, but in chronological order, if you're listening from beginning to the end, this is the first time that they, isn't it? The first time they actually say the word love in a song, period.
I think so.
And one other reason why I like it so much, I have a I have a friend who has informed me that it is a very great song to listen to in a altered state of being, as Mike has pointed out earlier. Friend of mine definitely... got into an alter state, and this was probably the standout track to listen to. Not because that's illegal. I wouldn't say anyone should ever do that. But my friend does approve of this track, so it's definitely like a standout for me.
Yeah.
Keaton,
I just wanted to say I didn't really find an issue with the repetitive nature of the song. I kind of felt it was more like maybe like a mantra or something. You know, it was kind of just like, you know, it seemed like it had a purpose. Like, you know, it wasn't them trying to be repetitive. You know, that's all I don't know, really.
Apparently, due to several people in the chat have been kind enough to inform us that Linkin Park has used the word love in a song before. Apparently, they use it in points of authority, and you're right, you love the way I look at you. So it's true, but the next track is kind of different. Can somebody pronounce it for me quick before I continue, because I don't want to make an ass out of myself.
Jornada del Muerto.
Thank you.
Jornada del Muerto.
Jornada del Muerto.
J is an H in Spanish.
Well, one of those are right. But anyways, the track itself, I thought it was kind of interesting that Mike decided to sing in Japanese for this track. It's probably something I wouldn't have expected seeing it in a track list. In fact, honestly, when I first saw the track name in a track list and translated it, I believe it means Valley of the Dead, or something like that. Journey of the Dead, thank you. And so when I heard the Journey of the Dead, for some reason I thought it was going to be like a Killers type song. I thought it was going to sound, I don't know why, but in my head I pictured it was going to sound like, you know, All the Things That I've Done by the Killers. I don't know why, but that's just the idea, the vision I got when I heard the title. And the thing is, not only was it completely different than what I imagined it was going to sound like, but it was really, really an interesting track. I kind of wish it would have been longer, but I understand the reason why they did it the way they did. Honestly, there's not much I can say. It's an interlude, but it was a pretty good song. And apparently, you know, for those who don't know, but it's kind of common knowledge, apparently the Japanese does loosely translate into "lift me up, let me go," which is a nod to the Catalyst. I mean, that's really all I had to say about that. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, it's actually, probably go as far to say it's probably my favorite interlude on the album. I really like how it builds up, and I really like the lyrics. You know, even before I got the translation, I kind of, you know, it had that same kind of structure to it as the "lift me up, let me go" part. And I was kind of hoping it was that. And I know Minus is kind of going to wants to talk about that and kind of touch on the content a bit more. But yeah, I just want to say it's a great track. I really like the guitar work, and I really like everything about it. It's great.
Yeah, I also really like Jornada del Muerto. Apart from Empty Spaces, it's definitely, I think, the best interlude on this album. I really, really like how you know, at first I didn't know what the lyrics meant. I had no idea what they were saying, and it wasn't until I saw the lyric page on the site where I was just like, oh wow, that makes the album a lot better for me, because those are the things that really you see the concepts playing their role throughout each of the tracks. And that's why I really like Fernando Muerto, and I like the synth part that comes in. I love the feel to that. And so, definitely the best interlude on this album, apart from Empty Spaces, for sure.
Yeah.
I agree. I really like the synth part, and it kind of reminds me of an old mid-90s Mega Drive game or something like that for some reason. But
Genesis. You
know, well, yeah, I mean, it's just... I just love that kind of feel of that synth. I mean, as a synth player, I mean, you know, it's such a cool sound. But I definitely say it's probably my favorite interlude. No offense, Lewis, I think it's better than Empty Spaces. But
I
like it.
Heresy. Burn the witch, purification by fire. You do not talk down about Empty Spaces like that. Continue.
I'm so sorry. I really am. I really am.
Yeah.
Anyways, in terms of the actual synth part, I'm going to stray away from professionalism for a bit and say that the synth part in this song, this interlude, makes me want to have unprotected sex with it. It doesn't even have to take me to dinner, it doesn't have to take me to a movie. All it has to do is text saying, sup, and I'll be like, let's go. But this is my theory about the song, in my opinion, and it's something that fits well, and I know Todd will be the only person in this chat that will get this, but if you notice, the track name is Spanish. And the lyrics are Japanese, which doesn't really make any sense until you look at the actual track name and notice how whenever we talk about certain songs, like in shorthand, we'll use acronyms, like for No More Sorrow, NMS, POA, for Points of Authority, OSC, ITE, for In the End. If you look at Jornada de Muerto, it's JDM, which in car slang stands for Japanese Domestic Market, which are parts that you would buy from Japan. So, it's a Spanish name, but the actual acronym is a reference to car racing in Japan, which is why, in my opinion, the Japanese lyrics make perfect sense.
You see how far out.
I'm sorry about the professionalism, but, you know, everyone that is actually watching this that knows me on the forums was probably waiting for me to say something completely off, like, far left field, wow. Something like that. And I think the synth part was...
I feel like I've been trolled, Linus. I feel like I've been trolled.
Yeah, I feel like I've been trolled. Like, I don't know.
Early on, I was like, I'll let Minus talk about the lyrical content, you know. I know he wants to touch on it. I thought he was going to talk about, you know, the bombs and, like, Nagagascar and, you know, the reference to kind of that.
Nagaskar? I think you mean Nagasar.
Joe, a.k.a. Uncle Raj of the LPA Chain Gang. You should know by now that I will never really ever talk about anything seriously unless it's for something official, which is why I can get into the metaphorical. I can talk about how it's a metaphor for, like, the Japanese getting bombed and how it connects to the very first use of the atomic bomb in Arizona. But I'm much more entertaining being feedback about it, so.
Yeah.
I just thought it was
it kind of felt like a subtle jab, like to being like, you're not like to expect the unexpected from the band, because you figure when we first found out about it, it was like, whoa, what, this is not an English song, and people were assuming like it wouldn't be in it would be in Spanish or something, and it ends up being Japanese. It's like, wow,
yeah,
it's really different.
Just to jump in real quick, I believe Lucas asked if there was any giveaways. In case you guys don't know, somebody in the chat can do me a favor and post this in the chat. We are currently holding a contest with Hot Topic We're giving away a 1,000 Suns themed t-shirt and a CD DVD. Unfortunately, I do regret to say it is for the United States only, but you know, maybe you can get one of your friends to enter it and then mail it to you. But if you are in the United States, we are currently doing a contest for that. That was a Hot Topics choice, not ours, unfortunately. But that's just something that you should know. We might try to speed things up a little bit. We didn't realize that we're talking about this for so long. But the next one, Waiting for the End, I personally love this song. I didn't like it at first. I thought that Mike's... that's the way I can say it. Reggae-style vocals were kind of different. It took a lot to get used to because it was something you didn't expect on that song. But I personally loved it after a couple listens. Like what Jay Sensei says, it really sounded that like the Beatles. If you listen to Chester's vocals on the song, especially the sitting in an empty room part of the song, it sounds a lot like something out of the Beatles, which is a direction I never thought the band was going to go to. But you know, I really think that it's a good thing that the band is doing something like that. You know, shout out to Linkin Park Forever. I do love how the song builds up towards the end as well. Personally, my favorite part of the song, I don't know how they're going to recreate it live, is when the bridge comes in, and I think Chester's singing Hold On, I'm not sure, I could never really understand it, but they're skipping his vocals throughout the chorus. I thought that part is really cool. I'm glad it's the next single. I think it's going to do really good on the airwaves, but yeah, I think it's a good song, and basically all I have to say. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I was probably in the same boat as you. Like, when I first heard the album, it wasn't immediately one of my favorites. But and you know, it probably still isn't. But the thing about the song is, I always find it's like the one that's like just stuck in my head at just random times in a day. And you know, it's got a really great melody to it, and I think it'll do really well as a single. I hope it does well as a single. And yeah, it's definitely growing on me. And you know, it's kind of hard to kind of put the song into a place where, you know, I could listen to it and kind of take meaning from it personally. You know, hopefully I'll kind of get a stronger connection to it in the future, but it's definitely growing on me, and it's definitely stuck in my head a lot. And yeah, it's just it's a good song. Not one of my favorites, but I think it would do well as a single. So.
Yeah, I would have to agree with, for the most part, with what everyone else has said, but the thing that I like most about this song is how it's kind of like how Chester has described in interviews, how the lyrics itself are, especially Chester's, are very sad. And the overall mood of the song is a bit happier. And it's like this, you know, sort of summertime song. And I really like the feel of it quite a bit. I feel also that the lyrics are something that a lot of people can relate to, which is what, you know, I think people like Linkin Park for, especially older materials, have lyrics for something that you could relate to. And I definitely feel that these lyrics are those kinds of lyrics. It's not my favorite song. But I definitely, the one thing that stands out to me, and I'll close with this, is how just my heart, it just sounds like 311. I can't help but think of 311 when it starts coming in. And, but I think that's super cool. It's a new flavor, and I really like it. So, yeah, that's what I think. And, yeah, moving on to what Luke wants to say.
I really didn't know what to make of this song when I first heard it, when they put it up on their MySpace page. But, you know, the more I listened to it, I think someone said this in the chat, the more I listened to it, the more I liked it. And, you know, I definitely say now that it's my favorite track off of 1,000 Suns because, as you said, Lewis, you know, it's got that kind of, you know, those kind of dark lyrics, but it's got kind of overall summer feel. Mike's kind of reggae-style vocals, yeah, kind of really set the tempo for the song, and you know it makes it kind of bouncy almost when the bridge comes in, when Mike does the reggae vocals in the synth solo and then the chorus again. So you know I definitely love the overall vibe. You know it reminds me a bit of Bleed It Out by you know having a kind of dark theme but having kind of real kind of positive feel to the song. So, yeah, it's my favorite track off 1,000 Suns, and really? It's a really, really great track.
Mm. do you think this song would have benefited more if they did release it in the summer? Because it has kind of got that vibe. Do you think they kind of missed out on that?
Pardon?
If, you know, because you said the track has kind of a summer vibe to it. You know, it's kind of got that upbeat kind of tempo.
Yeah.
I just kind of thought that maybe it would have benefited them more to kind of release it around summertime. But obviously, it would...
Obviously, they were working on a kind of schedule and a deadline. So, you know, I definitely feel like it would have been beneficial, definitely. But unfortunately, it's not to be.
Casey, do you have any opinions?
This song has made like 30 people around the state of Texas who have had to drive around me have their ears bleed from me trying to hit Chester's high note in the last
waiting 40 years. Okay, no.
Not that part. God, that part's fine. That part I can do that part. And I'm definitely not going to sing on the podcast, no matter how hard everyone in the chat tries to get it to happen. This song, actually watching the live videos from the New York show, kind of beat into my head how the statement of the band breaking themselves apart and putting themselves back together actually worked out. Because I mean, we have Brad playing the piano part, Mike playing what's arguably lead guitar for most of the song until the bridge, and just like kind of like roles being reversed. And this song actually reminds me a lot of Points of Authority in terms of how the structure works with the rap. Like the rap, I guess you would say the bridge, even though it's really not the bridge, comes first, and then Chester parts, and then the rap reoccurs again. But the LPTV video where Mike comes up with the idea of ending the song right after the chorus instead of like having some like conceited outro, I have to thank Mike personally for that, because that's probably my favorite part of the song, how it ends. And waiting for the end to come was awesome. Waiting for the end of waiting for the end to come.
Oh, I
see what you did there.
Did you? Because I have no idea what I did at all. Please tell me. I am completely oblivious to all the clever puns that I may or may not suggest.
You suck. Shut up.
Right, stop. You suck. Stop trolling.
Shut your face.
Okay. Enough of that. But anyways, on to probably my favorite song in the album. Blackout.
Woo!
I absolutely love what the band did on this song. It is probably one of the craziest songs that I personally have ever heard, not just from Linkin Park, but in general. One, I thought it was really, really clever on how instead of, you know, having Mike rap like what you would expect on that song. I mean, I personally call it sing rapping. I don't know what other people would call it, but I think, you know, Chester's vocal performance on the song is absolutely excellent. Love how he screams in the chorus, but even what's more interesting, I actually laughed when I heard the 30-second clip. And it's not because the song was funny, but it was so crazy to hear Chester screaming at the top of his lungs while this Nintendo-like 8-bit thing goes on in the background. It sounds like Chester's like losing at Super Mario and is like flipping out at the TV screen.
Super Mario.
Mario. Okay, Mega Mario. Man, whatever your vice is, if you will. But I like how, you know, it's this huge, like almost dancey, like 80s type feel. And then at the end of the track, it just turns into something completely different. And by the way, Mike totally kicks ass on his vocal performance in this song. I think it's one of the best ones on the record. And I said, okay, Super Mario. Okay, all right.
Mario. Super Mario.
And that's the female version, Mario.
You watch.
No, it's Peach, goddammit. What the
now
hell?
That I'm being trolled by my own staff.
You wouldn't want to see Mario as a female. God.
All right, shut up. All right, now that I'm being trolled, Joe, go ahead with your opinion. So.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite track on the album. was definitely the one I connected to most when I first heard it, and it still is my favourite now. And everything about it is just something like the way you were talking about it, it's got that kind of complacent kind of, you know, techno Mario style beat to it in the background, you know. kind of juxtaposed with, like, you know, the really kind of aggressive vocals from Chester. You know, it's obviously purposely done, and I think that kind of, I don't know if I really want to delve too much into kind of how I interpret the song, but to me, that kind of is what makes the song. You know, I've got this kind of complacent backdrop, you know, kind of Chester's aggressive vocals, and those two working together. And you kind of come to, like, you know, the bridge, if you even want to call it a bridge, where it's kind of got this, like, techno breakdown. And then, you know, you've kind of got, like, the, you know, the fade out, which kind of brings me to my next point about the song. You know, I've heard people kind of say, oh, I like the first part more than the second part, or I like, you know, I like the second part more than the first. Like, kind of thinking, referring to it as, like, two different songs. And I never really got that impression, you know. The bridge really didn't separate the track. The track works as a whole, everything about it, especially because in that last part, you've kind of still got, like, the do-do-do-do-do-do that comes in. Yeah, that's right, I just did. And,
Oh, is that the Super Mario theme song? I can't
tell. Yeah, that was Mario beat, I think Derek was talking about.
Yeah. I think that was...
Okay, just for the record, that's how we pronounce it over in Pennsylvania, so I'm sorry that I'm not, like, king pronunciation here, and I can't pronounce everything properly. And just for the record, whoever mentioned that I messed up first, they think it was my mission. You completely suck. So anyways, move along. Move ahead.
But yeah, favorite song on the album, everything about it is great. Shout out to Keaton for doing a lyrics video to it, that was awesome. And on to the next one. On to the next one.
Never again.
I don't know how to interpret that. Blackout, for the most part, is definitely one of my favorite songs, but I have to be quite honest, I have to disagree with Joe on a couple of things. One thing that it really does not, to me, does not feel like a song. I love the, you know, I love Chester's whole part in the beginning. I think that it's incredible. It's dark, and I swear the first time I heard him say, like, "Fuck it, are you listening?" I just, oh my god, I had to change my pants, and I had to pause the song. It was bad, but. So I like that first part, but I have to be honest, I really do not think that that middle part, when they're playing around with his vocals and it sounds very Reanimation-like, I can't, I've tried so hard to really appreciate it, and as cool as it sounds, I think it would sound really cool on its own, or it would sound cool in a remix, it doesn't fit to me, and I don't really think it goes in that song. I think they could have done something a bit more, I mean... What I like about it is how it's a change-up. It completely throws you off, which is definitely really cool. I completely forget about it every time, but at the same time, I don't like the nature of just that part. I just don't think it fits.
Can I just interrupt you for a second?
Go ahead.
I just kind of want to talk about, you know, because I didn't want to really go into it, like my interpretation of the song, but I think that breakdown kind of worked really well in the contest, at least in like how I interpret it. I've kind of got like this really complacent, you know, beat going on. And you've got Chester's aggressive vocals. It feels like he's building up to something, you know. It feels like it's kind of working against kind of everything else that's going on around him, and it's just kind of focusing on this one subject. I think the music kind of represents a different thing to what Chester's kind of saying in this song, and the breakdown is kind of the culmination of what Chester's feeling. Kind of merging into his, like, you know, everything else that's kind of happening into his life, and kind of bringing that breakdown into fruition, and kind of representing, like, kind of merging the verses and music together. And that's why the last part of the song kind of comes in the way it does, and it's so different, because at that point the music and the song, the lyrics become one, and kind of he was unable to kind of help himself going into that kind of state of mind. I probably made no sense whatsoever to the people in the chat. I apologize. I'm on a tangent of thinking, but that's at least how I interpreted it, Lewis. So I just kind of wanted to...
I can definitely see that. And that actually does make it a little bit better for me, the way you interpreted it. But yeah, personally for me, it just doesn't fit. But the last part of the song with Mike coming in and sort of building it up, really great. So that's why I really like the song overall. So yeah, what do you think, Luke?
I can't really sum up my thoughts of this song in a word other than just insanity. you know, that's the best way I can describe this song, is its insanity. Yeah. I mean, it's just so many parts in one song, you know, different layers, a dub breakdown, screaming vocals, you know, I can't really describe it in a way that, I can't really describe the way that I feel for it in a manner, because I don't think I'm doing it any justice, but all I can say is it's a fantastic song, and with one of my favorites off this album.
Well, in some of the chat that you guys can't see, Lois just posted my perverted version of the song, and I'm not gonna say it out loud, just because there's a rule that some of you may not know exists called Keep It Clean.
And,
yeah, but I was actually going to go into the genius of how the song is put together, but Derek did say something about Super Mario and how it seems like that song, or this song, is Chester screaming about it. And I have a little presentation that I'd like to give. These are rewritten lyrics for the verse of Blackout in terms of Super Mario. Here we go.
Oh gosh.
We don't really have time for that, guys.
So I could beat this level. I cannot kill Bowser. Can someone give me a mushroom? Or give me that superstar so I can be invincible. I run and jump and jump and jump and jump. Where the fuck is Princess Peach? Nah! Okay, I'm done.
That was pretty cool. That was pretty good.
Alright.
Sorry, it had to be done. I'll stop talking.
Mario.
Alright.
That was interesting.
That was interesting.
Okay, well. Alright, so now now that Minus has, or Casey, or whoever you want to call him, has entertained us with that beautiful.
There's a time when the operation of the machine. Yeah.
Alright. Okay, yes, well, as Joe just so nicely said as well, Wretches and Kings. This track is interesting because it's one of the first parts on the album, aside from the Robert Oppenheimer speech, where the band kind of introduces a song with the speech. The first time I heard it, I don't know if I really liked the speech in the beginning. I know that's kind of blasphemy because everybody likes to quote it by heart, but you know, I didn't really appreciate the speech at first, but I do like how this album, you know, was completely different, and then all of a sudden, this is kind of like a throwback to the old sound of Linkin Park. You know, and I'm not saying that I was one of the people who wanted another Hybrid Theory, but it was kind of cool to see them kind of embrace their roots with this song.
Derek, do you think it was a conscious choice by the band to kind of make it a throwback to that sound, or do you think that's just how it turned out?
I think so. I think, you know, I'm pretty sure that with the band, you know, they were trying to be as different as possible, but I'm pretty sure there was times while they were writing on the album where they made something that sounded like their old stuff. And I think as this song progressed, I think they realized that if they would have tried to make it sound any different, it wouldn't have sounded right. I mean, my basic suggestion, I'm going to make this quick. Anybody who listens to this song, if you have a good sound system in your car, definitely turn the song up all the way. This has one of the best bass lines on the entire freaking album. And I like it. You know, it was not one of my favorite tracks on the album just because it sounds too much like their older stuff. But I do think it's a really good track. And really, that's all I have to say. Lewis, what do you think?
I'll try to be brief on this, but I personally think it's a really great track. It's grown on me more and more. Like, at first I really liked it, and I started listening to it, and I really started listening to it again. It's really great. I think one of the better tracks on this album for sure. And the reason for it is not only this really sick beat, but the lyrics of it. Like, if you really pay attention to the lyrics, they really coincide with the nature of the Mario Savio clip. If you really know the context of it, and I'm not going to go into it, but you should really look up that speech and why it was said and what the history of it was. And I also just want to include, before I move on, Mime just made a comment in chat about Super Mario Savio, which I think is hilarious.
It's Mario!
That's a time.
Shit, the console.
With the operation of what?
So what I was going to say was that Mario Savio was a student at, he was a student at UC Berkeley, and that where he made his speech, it was on this, it was by this building called Sproul Hall. And I go to the UC Berkeley. I'm, in fact, I'm there right now in my dorm, and it's quite literally 5 minutes away from me. And by honest to God, I put the song on my iPod. I hadn't listened to it yet. And as I was walking by the by Sproul Hall, that clip came on. So I was like, yes, this is like, it gave me chills. So yeah, definitely one of my favorite tracks.
I think the track probably has the best beat in the entire album. You know, it's just got that kind of energetic feel to it. I think he'll be a fan favorite perform live. I think the entire message of the song reflects off of the band's kind of situation with Warner. I don't know if anyone else got that kind of interpretation, but you know, the whole kind of message of the song is about like not allowing your superiors to kind of mess you around, and that's kind of what Mario Savio was saying in his speech as well. Just, you know, workers have their rights and stuff like that. So you know, I think it's definitely one of the highlights of the album. You know, I just love that beat ever since the first minute I heard it, and I really love to pay homage to Joe Hahn at the end of this song, because the scratching at the end of this song is just absolutely class. So yeah, it's a great track overall, and that part in particular is a highlight.
Yeah.
Wisdom, Justice, and Love. This track, probably, I think it's one of the most depressing songs on the album. It's kind of weird because it, at no part during the album, I mean, during the song, I mean, do you really hear, you know, anything from Mike and Chester. But in the same respect, it's just, you can hear the hurt in Martin Luther King's voice as he's saying what he's saying. For most people who don't know, the speech is about the Vietnam War. And it's just, his whole emotion was just, it really sent chills for me throughout the entire track. And I think almost the way it just kind of, you know, disintegrated into this whole, like, robotic type sound was really, really, you know, moving. I usually with robotics, it really doesn't, you know, give me any emotion, if you will. But this is probably one of the most depressing songs on the album. And I think that the band really did a good job on it. I really, you know, appreciate what they did. I like how you know, you hear basically bombs going off in the background, and you know, you hear the piano. The composition's perfect. It's probably one of the highlights of the album, in my opinion. But you know, really, that's all I had to say about that. Casey, what do you think?
Martin Luther King Jr. was an Autobot. I think we can all kind of agree on that now. And it makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Like, of course, Autobots would be against the war in Vietnam, because they've already seen the war on their planet completely destroy their civilization. And to see what basically amounts to a bunch of human soldiers using the transformed version of Megatron from the original series and try to kill other people, it really, it cannot be reconciled with Wisdom, Justice, and Love.
Sorry, I had to applaud. That was probably the best response out of the entire... Yeah, and that totally just happened. That was probably the best part of this podcast, Casey. Good work.
Okay, you're done.
Way to take
That's exactly why I'm here.
Emotional song and turn it into a joke, Casey. Well done.
I hope you're clapping and not fapping, Derek.
Martin Luther.
Okay, yeah.
Robot in disguise.
Moving on. Okay, I know that I'm basically going to go back on what I said. I know I said Blackout was my favorite track, but honestly, if there's a song that really affected me on the first listen, and a song that I think is probably the best song the band's ever written in their career, hands down, is Iridescent. This track, just in the way that you hear Mike sing in the beginning of it, you know, the way he leads into the whole track, you know, the lyrics and the whole composition of the song is probably one of the most adult-sounding and most mature-sounding songs the band has ever made. I mean, I really think that it's a masterpiece. I mean, honestly, it's a really good culmination of everything that the entire album stood for. I mean, it's really neat how, you know, you just are hit with this barrage of different sounds, and all of a sudden you have this really stripped down song. And the lyrics are really hopeful too. I like how, you know, despite having a very sad and solemn sound to it, the song's kind of encouraging you to, you know, let go of your demons and you know, move ahead. It's like Tim said in the chat, it's an extremely well-written song. I think, like I said, it's the best song they've ever written. People won't agree with me, but it's hands down their best track. Yeah. I think Lewis had to say something about it.
I just want to say one quick thing. It's not my favorite track. It's a really good song, but it's not my favorite. But the one thing that I really do like about it, the lyrics are phenomenal, especially the verses. I really like how the lyrics sort of pertain to the nature of like an atomic bomb blast, like, you know, the light that blinded every angel. I think that's just it's brilliant to me.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, not my favorite track, but the lyrics are just incredible for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to just point out that along with, I mean, I know I said that Waiting for the End was my favorite track of the album. I'd say this comes in either joint first or a very close second, because, you know, it's just got that kind of powerful message to it. It's just like saying, you know, just let go of, you know, those bad memories you kind of have, you know, that kind of struggle in life that you're having, and just move forward. And it's got a really positive message. And, you know, I think that's something that, you know, literally everyone can relate to. And I think one of these lyrics are like a turning point for the band, because whereas, you know, you usually associate Linkin Park lyrics for being, you know, said via kind of a first person perspective. I mean, the band is turning that, and it's, you know, it's aiming it towards, you know, you know, they're saying, do you feel these certain things? And, you know, I think it's got such a kind of powerful effect, and, you know, it's just such a positive message, even though it's quite a down tempo and dark kind of song. And I think it's definitely another highlight from the album.
Third single? Would it be?
Definitely.
Yeah, I would love to see this single.
What do you think, Keaton?
Pretty much everyone said what I was going to say, but, you know, just personal preference, I would love to see what these guys could do if it was just pure orchestral. You know, I mean, I understand they would never do it this way, but I would just love to see a performance where they've got, you know, a supporting orchestra behind them and playing the song. You know,
maybe if an acapella comes out, you can do your Keaton Hamishashi. I have the longest name in history.
Really? Everyone's going to...
Okay, first off, it's Hamishashi. I really love the song Iridescent. It just seems like a beautiful song. I live in Hawaii, Yamoto.
For those who don't know, Keaton entered the Kalish Remix Contest and was one of the finalists. You listen to the video where Mike is talking about, you know, who the winners are, every single contestant, every person who was a finalist, he pronounced right. But when it came to say Keaton's name, he said Keaton Hamishashi Hashimoto. And it was probably one of the best moments in OBA history. I mean, just hearing that right there, you know, it gave birth to a meme between the staff members. We now, you know, find any way we can, including, you know, Casey, who's not staff, that's it anyways, to, you know, extend Keaton's name as long as possible. Keaton I mean, Minus already holds the record for the longest interpretation of Keaton's name. I think he went a whole song in between Hashi and Moto. So
I actually ended up freestyling a poem in the middle of his name. It was like, Keaton Hamishashi, there once was a bear, and the bear was great. He really liked honey, and that shit was irate, and there were bees, and the bees were very mad, and the bees stung the bear, and the bear was sad, and Jay and Vidal were all in the chat, and Castillamore said, that's awesome, I don't know what's up with that. R-San-9903 is a magician, and I can't think of any words that rhyme with magician Emoto. Just so you know, Keaton, I am going to follow you for the rest of your fucking life and make fun of your last name from now on. And that's all I have to say about Iridescent.
Oh my god.
And since there's nothing that we can say that will follow up the awesomeness of that, we're just going to go on to Fallout. Really interesting track. It was kind of interesting how Mike used a vocoder on his track. It kind of sounds like, I mean, kind of sounds like Daft Punk in a way. It kind of has that, you know, unique sound to it. I mean, I just think it's a really, really, really good track. I think the band should experiment more with that vocoder effect. I know some people called it autotune, which is the dumbest thing in the world because that's not what autotune is. But I just hope that, you know, in the future they do it more, because I think it's a really good track. And that's really all I have to say. You got something to say, Keaton?
I was just gonna say, like, I don't know, it feels like an incomplete track or something. Like, it feels like there could have been more to it. Like, you know, I don't know if it's just me, but it kind of feels like, you know, there could have been more. And I'm not sure, like, what it's supposed to represent. Like, I kind of took away from it, like, it goes from robotic back to human, like, you know, so I kind of feels like it was supposed to, I guess, be like in relation to the wisdom, justice, and peace, you know, how it goes in the opposite. But I don't know, I really couldn't.
If I can just jump in, I'd probably say, in terms of like the lyrical content, you know, when I kind of list the burn in the skies, I mean, take what interpretation you want from, you know, the chorus, you know, whereas I'm swimming in the smoke. I think it's kind of more of a throwback to that. I think it's kind of, if you're going to say that's put Burn in the Skies at the start of the album, you know, after the Oppenheimer speech, and then, you know, it kind of kicks in with those lyrics. I think it's a throwback to those lyrics, and I just think it's trying to basically communicate with the listener that, you know, don't forget how this all started. This is where it kind of began. I think it's kind of more of a throwback. Again, I don't really want to go into like the interpretation of it, but I think it's just trying to make that connect, like, you know, where it began, you know, kind of coming to the close, which is obviously, I think the catalyst is the close. You know, I'll talk about that when we get to them next, but I think that's the kind of interpretation I got. And I think I'm going to go and say it is a relevant track. I mean, I just ripped through it being unfinished, you know, maybe, but I think the lyrics and the way it is communicated says a lot. So,
yeah. I mean, I understand its purpose. I understand it was supposed to be a seeing into the catalyst, but I do have to agree with Keaton. I just wish almost, even though it's meant to be an interlude, that they turn it into a full song, because I like the intro, and I think, you know, they almost could have used the robotic intro and then had a full song with it. So, but speaking about seeing into the catalyst, the next song, of course, is one that everybody knows very well.
Lift me up.
Yes, it's Joe's the catalyst. and by the way, just so you guys know, at the end of the podcast, we're going to be opening it up for LPA karaoke, and you're going to get to hear Joe's wonderful, you know, wonderful versions of all Linkin Park songs. He's actually putting out a hit record. Maybe if we get time, Keaton might be able to show his new hit song, Welcome Back to Raw. dedication to World Wrestling Entertainment. Maybe at the end of the podcast, we can play it as the outro music. But
actually, that's the thing. Joe's album has been delayed by Atlantic. So, yes. we're actually starting a protest. We're calling it Draper Friday. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, we're all going to go, like, gather in front of the Atlantic actual headquarters. I think it's on the East Coast somewhere. We're going to, yeah.
Draper,
I think his album's called Lasers or something, you know.
Well played.
Wrong guy, Linus. Wrong guy.
I think you're talking about Lupe Fiasco, just a shout out there.
Well, Lupe Fiasco did have that British phase when he released Japanese cartoons, so it's kind of hard to tell.
British cartoon? I'm doing a collaboration with him, man. British cartoon.
No. The band was called Japanese Cartoon, and he sang in a British accent.
So, yeah.
The Catalyst.
The Catalyst, yeah. I basically already said my opinion about it in the last podcast, so basically, good song, good intro to the album. I like the fact that it, you know, sounds different than anything else on the record. Love how it doesn't have a defined structure. That's all I have to say.
Right. Yeah, I think after putting it into the context of the old album, I think, to me, it is kind of the closer of the album, really. I mean, you know, obviously The Messengers is the final track, but I always wonder what it would have been like to kind of hear this track with a fresh pair of ears in the context of a record rather than hearing it as a single. You know, maybe it would have stood out more. But I think it's going to take some time to kind of adjust to, like, you know, obviously it was a single and we heard this track a lot before we heard the album. But I think it's definitely a great track and it's probably going to be one of my favourites. I think it's going to stand the test of time and I think it will be one of the standout tracks from the record.
I agree. I think it's just going to be the song that probably sticks from the album. I think it's a really good track. But yeah, I mean, what do you have to say about it, Liz?
It's my favorite track off this album, without a question. I really do agree with Joe and with Derek saying that this song will stand the test of time. And I have to say, you know, the Lift Me Up, Let Me Go part, that whole part of the song, I think it is the best moment, that the best musical moment and composition that Linkin Park has ever created. And that's a really big thing to say. I know that, but it is to me the epitome and the quintessential moment in all of Linkin Park's career to date. And Todd ruined it for me.
Todd just said something that we can't say on the air. So yeah, good work.
This is on par with my blackout line.
Yeah. Oh, okay, well, since you're not staff, Casey, you can go ahead and say it.
Okay. Todd said, "Get me up, lick my boner."
And I have many interpretations.
Effectively, that ruins it for me. But seriously, just the close. It is a great way to close the concept of the album, and I think just to say before we move on, it is a great ending, and I like how they put the messenger after it. But we'll get into that, of course.
I tried to find ways to sneak into the next track, but that's now three times during this podcast that either Todd or Casey have said something that's left me just completely speechless. So good work, Todd. You just completely screwed both me and Lewis up. Very good job.
He screwed you.
You're welcome.
Todd really fucked me up on that one. I was so in the emotion of what I was saying, and god damn it, Todd.
Yeah, Todd, you failed. But anyways, yeah, that definitely was a what the fuck moment. I agree, Sora. But All right, this brings us to the last track of the album, The Messenger. Probably, you know, more so than any other track, more so than Robot Boy, this track just seems to really divide the fan base. There's some people who flat out don't like it at all, think it sucks. There's some people who think it's a genius track. I'm on the side of people who think it's genius. Somebody even said in the chat that they think it's horrible, but I don't agree, because you see, I think... I totally understand what Chester said in an interview about a couple weeks ago about how, you know, you just got hit with this whole barrage of technology, the whole entire album, and you're singing about, you know, regular, you know, rock music mixed with technology, and all of a sudden, boom, you're hit with this, you know, this really dramatic, thanks, Tim. Tim just said, divide this, and then pointed down to his crotch. Thank you. Basically, it's a stripped down song. That's what she said. But it's a really good track. I think I like the composition of it. I think that the track itself, something that's really really interesting about this song is that with Linkin Park, they've never used autotune on their vocals. But, you know, their vocals have always been very, very perfect on a record. You know, they always, you know, are very, very polished. And then all of a sudden, you know, you come with this track that, you know, uses no vocal polish or anything. It's just this raw, emotional vocal from Chester. He even commented in an interview that he was kind of upset that his vocals cracked at one part of the song. But I really think that that was actually a good thing, because the emotion of the track itself, it's a perfect ending to the album. I like how Linkin Park did a very, very, very risky move by going a cappella almost and doing a whole acoustic, and I just think it's an excellent track. Does anybody have something to say about that? Or
I just kind of pretty much agree with you, so...
Yeah, I would agree as well. I think it's the perfect way to end the album overall, and it's beautiful. It is a very beautiful song, and I understand why people don't like it, but I do disagree like Derek does, and I think it's absolutely incredible.
Keith, what do you have to say?
I think it does really well as a, you know, after everything we've heard, it kind of,
yeah,
you know, I can't see any other way for the album to end, mm-hmm. You know, but, you know.
Yeah, I think it definitely, a lot of people kind of said, you know, it doesn't, you know, it didn't fit, because it is kind of such a stripped down song, but to me that is why it fits, you know, it's kind of what makes it stand out and kind of, you know, kind of give it that position on the album as a final track. I think it's a great ending to the album. And it couldn't have been anywhere else. And to put it as the final track is just so. It just had to be done, really, with the message of the song and everything about it. So, no pun intended, the message. But, yeah.
I think the message was expecting this track.
You had something to say, Luke? Go ahead.
All right. Well, I was just going to say that I think it would be like really interesting to see how this song, or if this song would be performed live, because I could just imagine that being quite an awe-inspiring moment, seeing, you know, just Chester singing this song to, you know, thousands of people, you know, with candles and mobile phones up in the air and all that. You know, I think this might be a bit of a ballsy statement, but you know, this song really kind of reminds me of something by, you know, Bob Dylan or John Lennon or something like that. You know, it's got that kind of positive kind of vibe to it. It's got that message to it, which is why I think ultimately they called the song Messenger. So I really like this track.
I mean, would you have something to say, Casey?
Nothing in particular, other than I was going to break out into song, but we're on time limit, so.
Oh, I mean, now that we've basically gone through all the songs on the album, overall impressions of the album, the first time I listened to the whole entire album, I kind of just stood there and just was like, what the hell did I just listen to? I really did not know how to really digest the album as a whole. I think that it was really, really just a big shock for me. I mean, I knew the album was going to be different. For over 2 years, the band was saying about how it's going to be a different sound, but I don't think I was really as prepared for how different the tracks were going to be on the album. Overall, though, after a couple of listens, I really have grown to appreciate it as a whole. I do understand what the band was doing with the album. I understand what they were trying to accomplish. I do have to be in the minority. Well, it's not the minority. Some people believe it, some people don't. I do think it is better than their first album. I think they took the creativity of Hybrid Theory and branched it into something better. I can't give it a perfect rate, though, only because there are some small things about the album that do bring it down. But I would say that I would venture to say anywhere from an 8.5 to a 9 out of 10. I personally am in love with the album. What do you think about it, Joe?
Yeah, I think it's a great album. It's like just one of those albums that I find it really hard to kind of listen to individual tracks off the album. I can't think of what have been instances where I'm listening to select songs, you know. But most of the time, I just hit track one and just let it play all the way through. It's definitely not an album that you kind of skip through. And I think that's what kind of makes it a great album to me. You know, it's definitely given me a more optimistic feeling about the band after Minutes to Midnight. You know, which was a great album in my opinion. I really liked it. But it did have songs that I skipped, you know. This album I played through all the way. And I can just see this album kind of just, I know we mentioned it earlier, but kind of standing the test of time, and I think. It's a great kind of follow-up to what I see as a transitional album, which was Minutes to Midnight. And yeah, I'm really excited to see that they've taken this step and everything they've done. They've done exactly what I wanted them to do as a fan. And I really can't wait to see what they do next. I think they've done a lot of brave things by releasing this album. And like everything I've agreed with and everything I wanted them to do since Meteora, and they've finally done it. And I couldn't be more happy with it. And especially since I've got Blackout out, which is potentially my favourite LP song ever. Great album. I really enjoy it. Can't wait to see how it grows on me and then look back at it in like a year's time and see how I feel with it. So far, so good.
What I have to say about the album is that I sort of grew up with this band. You know, Hybrid Theory came out when I was really, really little. And so, of course, being as young as I was very impressionable. And the sort of lyrics and the darkness of each of these, of those early albums are very, it can really provide a bad impression on you if you're really young. So, yeah, I was, you know, this emotional, angsty adolescent, of course. But of course, this time when I grew up a little bit, and along with growing up just myself, but my musical taste evolved, I started to appreciate, you know, bands like Muse and Radiohead, U2, and bands that have really made impacts on the world. And so when I listen to an album like this that is just so different from everything else the band, it's, you know, themselves have done, as well as different from anything else that's really out right now, I can really appreciate it. And I think overall that this is the best record they've put out. It's the most creative, and I think that this is a great step forward for them, and it's a sign of great things to come. It's not a perfect album, but it's a great one. I think it'll stand the test of time. I give it a 9.25 out of 10, and I'm just really proud of the band and really proud of what they have accomplished and how they have pushed themselves to try something different each and every time, and regardless of what people think. And that is perfect advice for a band and for anyone, and just anyone in general, that it shouldn't matter what anyone else thinks. You do what you want to do, and if you like it, that's what matters. So great, great album, and I've definitely enjoyed listening to it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really great album overall. I do kind of feel like it, like, this should have been the natural kind of successor to Hybrid Theory and Reanimation, because, you know, I do kind of feel, you know, the band should have divulged into that experimentation that they did with Reanimation and you know, use it with Meteora and Minutes to Midnight. And I think they kind of missed the boat on that front, you know, the whole experimentation, because, you know, this is a very experimental album, and, you know, different layers of sounds, different methods of creating music. And I think, you know, I think it's weird to look back on Linkin Park and, you know that this is the same band who did release songs like, you know, One Step Closer and Paper Cut, and, you know, they just seem like two different bands now. And I think that this album has really succeeded in, you know, branching out the band's kind of you know, really making it known that they've finally matured their sound and they finally reached a kind of, you know, plateau where they can be acknowledged as serious kind of serious experimenting musicians, you know, who aren't afraid to go the distance to prove that they're not a one-track, you know, a one-trick pony, sorry. So, you know, I'd give the album around an 8 or a 9 out of 10 overall, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, what the band do next, because I think this could definitely be a stepping stone just towards something much more epic, and yeah, that's all I have to say.
Casey?
Well, for me, this album brought me one step closer to actually enjoying the band again, because I know I've discussed this with you guys, but for a while, the song, Linkin Park in general, kind of made me very, like, I don't know, I was kind of iffy, I was kind of numb to the whole ideal of what Linkin Park was. Like, Hybrid Theory was great, Reanimation, in my opinion, was the best album they had put out up until this album. Meteora, like, I don't see, nobody's going to be listening to that in, like, 5 years, in my opinion, really. It felt a lot like Hybrid Theory rehash. Minutes of Midnight, I looked back at my reviews of it back when it came out, and I saw that as a transition to what they were going to become, which was going to be A Thousand Suns. And to me, A Thousand Suns, is, in the end, it's like taking every single thing that I enjoyed from each album of Linkin Park's history and putting it together. It had the energy and the innovation that Hybrid Theory had back when it came out. It had the polish that Meteora had, it had the kind of like wacky instrumentation that Reanimations are bringing out, like being able to, like, you know, just go wherever you want with the track. It had the branching out and songwriting ability of Minutes of Midnight and put it all together to make this clusterfuck of an album. And I was saying this pretty early on in the, whenever it got released, and I got a lot of flack for it because everyone was like, oh, you probably shouldn't say this so early. You've only been listening to the album for like a week. And this is honestly, in my opinion, the best album they put out. As much as everyone likes Hybrid Theory was great for when you were 14, but to me, this seems like the album that out of all the CDs that I would listen to from Linkin Park 50, 60 years from now, this probably it would be the one that I would be listening to from then until eternity.
Well, I was waiting for the end of what Casey was saying there to really give my opinion on what someone had said in the chat. They asked what we thought about the Making of a Thousand Suns documentary. Honestly, to be quite honest, I it was probably the only time during the whole entire for thing of the album that I was disappointed in. I just thought that the DVD was rushed. I thought that with 2 years of working on an album, they could have given a lot more than just 30 minutes.
I disagree. I mean, I've heard a lot of people kind of say, oh, the DVD kind of sucked. But it was just a bit different from what people kind of had it. And we're still getting those kind of snippets in like the LPTV episodes. I noticed that it was a JRABLAO. I'm not sure how to pronounce your name, I'm sorry, but they asked what we thought of the DVD. And I actually really enjoyed the DVD. I thought it was one of their best ones. I mean, I know people was kind of disappointed because it didn't really kind of talk about, you know, it kind of really didn't go into too much detail about how they made the songs. But it was a great DVD and I really enjoyed it. And I think we're getting the best of both worlds of the LPTV. But yeah, in my opinion, Meeting with Our Sons was great. I enjoyed it.
It was an interesting look at the band, you know, during their process. It was kind of like, it felt a little trumped by LPTV. You know, if you were interested in seeing how they were actually making the songs versus, you know, kind of like maybe like the drama or, you know, that I mean, it was nice to see that kind of underbelly, you know, that you usually don't see making ofs. But yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Going back to the album, though, I think it was a really good album. Right? It's a very you know, it's very different, which is what I was really happy with. But I feel like even though they've really, you know, experimented, it kind of feels like they still weren't 100% confident in what they were doing, because it felt like they still kind of took, they still kind of played it safe in some areas, you know? And I think that A Thousand Suns acts as maybe this is the first step forward into, you know, really kind of pushing the bar, you know? And I hope that, you know, they continue to, you know, believe in themselves and kind of, you know, they take their learning experience with A Thousand Suns and apply it to whatever they do in the future.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I have to say.
Somebody asked us what kind of songs we want to see live off the new album. I mean, I feel a bit awkward kind of answering questions. I just want you guys to know in the chat that we kind of want you to kind of discuss this with us and kind of talk along with us. We're in no position to kind of say what we think more than you guys, so to get your feedback as well would be awesome. But I'd really like to see Blackout perform live. And then they're going to do When They Come For Me, and I think that's going to be an awesome song. But obviously Blackout will be my current favourite. I'd love to. I can't wait to see that live. I'm not sure about what you guys think.
I'd really like to.
Okay. Is there an echo? Wait to hear something.
Martin Luther King's back.
Oh no.
What's going on?
What?
Alright, well, something was wrong with Casey's microphone there, but Tim, yeah, you asked if we think that they're going to release an old school EP or song just to shock the fans and that hate that they've changed. Honestly, I have nothing against people who do not like the new direction the band has gone in. The band's new sound's not going to be for everybody. But honestly, I personally hope that they never go back to their old sound. I have nothing against the old sound. You know, that those albums were beautiful for me. You know, they all were important, you know, to me and, you know, certain parts of my life. But honestly, the old sound, it's already came to pass. The band has done all they can to really, really go into what they could with the sound that they had created. But like Mike has said in so many interviews, you know, once people realized that sound was successful, so many bands tried to copy it. So many people were trying to sound like Linkin Park. And, you know, they've grown out of the sound. You know, it's just not really something I want to hear from them anymore. I want to actually hear them go even more creative on this next album. I want to hear them broaden their horizons and be an even different band. So, no, I don't want to see them go back to their old sound. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. Kind of agree. I don't think you just kind of summed up everyone's opinion, to be honest with you. Sums up mine. The old sound's not coming back, and I really enjoy the way they're taking the music now. That's all there is to it. So,
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Definitely. We're looking forward to LPU10, though. I'm really interested to see what kind of these size and demos we're going to get this time around. I know somebody kind of asked us if we're looking forward to it. Yeah, it should be good. Interesting changes in the LPU.
I think it's really
interesting. Yeah, that seems to have caused a lot of problems with certain people in the forums.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people don't agree with the pricing, and, you know, they're still yet to really announce what price consists of. But, you know, I'm still excited. I'm really interested to see what they do, and it's going to be great.
Well, it was really kind of funny. I saw somebody comment on there that, you know, Chester at one point during the creation of this album had said that this was going to be the heaviest album yet. I think it's kind of interesting how Linkin Park changes during the album cycle. You know, it seems like every time they start making an album, they come out with, you know, they even come out with this idea of what the song's going to sound like. They go, oh, we think this is going to be a really metal album. And then it comes out, it sounds completely different. I really think that people need to take what the band says with a grain of salt, because things can really change during an album cycle.
I do agree with Jay Sensei. It is heavy, or Sensei, sorry, my Japanese is apparently not that good. But really,
Mario.
Mario.
You guys.
But what the fuck is Princess Peach?
Really, I really think that it is heavy without metal. I think that they accomplished heaviness without having to really rely on heavy guitars. Probably going to wrap it up soon, guys. We've been going for almost about 2 hours. We don't want this to go too long. So, I mean, do any of you guys in the chat really have any opinions that you might want to share with us? I mean, we want you guys to be a part of this as well. A double album. That's a good idea. I'd love to see him do a double album down the road. I think
didn't we actually consider this whenever the iTunes version came out? Because there was that... That message in the catalyst that made everyone think, oh, maybe they're still coming out with puzzles. Maybe there's a thousand moons coming out or some shit like that.
Well, I think a lot of people are kind of expecting some kind of remix album. All the remixes are coming out. We've got the Wrecking Things remix coming out pretty soon from the Get Busy committee. And, you know, we've had the catalyst on the Does It Offend You, yeah, and King Fantastic on the catalyst. But, you know, I don't think we're going to get a double album. I don't even think we're going to get an EP full of remixes, maybe down the line. But at the minute, I'm just really interested to see kind of what kind of remixes are going to be featured on the upcoming singles. I know we've got the Does It Offend You, yeah, remix on and the Waiting for the End single. And I can't see a double album, and I can't really see another official kind of remix album. But I do like all kind of tracks they are doing and kind of, and they might have said they've got a lot of remixes working on those songs. Great to see what comes out in the next few months.
I'm personally interested to see how. Sorry to interrupt. I just want to say that, speaking of remixes, I just want to see how they adjust the other songs from previous albums when they're doing it live. They mentioned that they would try and change some things, so that's something that's really interesting to me, and I hope to see some of that soon.
Yeah, I think the old tour is going to be really awesome, especially to see what, you know, the setup looks like. You know, we've got Josh Vanover working on the stage, and I'm really excited to see what they kind of do for it. It's going to be great.
Probably it's time for us to really announce the winner of the contest we were running on the site. Unless you guys have anything else to say. I mean, do you guys have anything to say that we haven't added yet, or?
Not really about the album. I just want to say, I just want to give a shout out to the Suicide Girls. Woo!
Shout out to that. You would shout them out.
Yeah,
that was the best moment ever, man. When they gave us a shout out, I love that site, man.
Oh yeah.
Well, Derek, you're definitely
what
perfect,
is,
Derek.
Can someone please explain what Suicide Girls is in thorough detail to all the listeners?
Google it.
You know what? Just because I want to be offensive, I'll go ahead and do it. For those who don't know, for those who are not Googling it, America Brace the Space basically summed it up. It's a website full, if you guys can imagine Playboy, but with an alternative twist, that's basically what Suicide Girls are. It's an awesome site. And to actually be, somebody just Googled it. Good job. And
I can't control my horny level.
Yeah. but yeah, it's a good site, and you know, to be shouted out by them, that was just hands down one of the most awesome moments ever. I
love how we're making out to be like the best accomplishment we've ever done.
Yeah, it was best.
Screw it,
that was
like Mike, man. That was better. You know?
Better than Mike. No, Suicide Girls beats Mike any day.
Oh,
beats
yeah.
Every
definitely.
Wait, what did you just say? Suicide Girls beat Mike.
Yeah, I was about to say, you've got an interesting mind going on there, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Now Jason says probably going to Photoshop that. Thanks a lot.
You guys are horrible.
But yeah, just in all seriousness, it was great to get a shout out from them and stuff, so yeah, good stuff.
Oh, God. Okay.
Just another thing to add to the accomplishments that LPA has had.
Oh, my
interview.
God.
Interview with a member of the band, Suicide Girls, tweet shout out. They are on par.
Sorry, Phoenix, but a few lines on Twitter just those who you off the tops.
Because everyone knows that everyone's on the Twitters.
So you guys, Twitters and the Facebook. Because you guys are getting the chance to hear this live, we're probably going to have to censor half the things that Lewis and Casey did in his chat. So you guys are going to hear the unedited version. We're probably going to have to edit out about 20 minutes worth of fapping. So.
What? Fapping?
I barely did anything.
This will be up for download for anyone who missed.
It is going to be up for download, guys. So
you can relive the moment forever.
Oh.
And we've got some, you know, we obviously did the first podcast with Adam from the LPU. We've decided to do this one with members of the LPA and just kind of the staff. But do expect some guests in the future on future podcasts. You know, this is just kind of us doing our Thousand Suns kind of rundown. And I've actually enjoyed doing it. But I do expect some guests on future podcasts.
Oh, yeah, we will definitely be having some special guests in the future, you know. Not that Casey isn't special, but, you know, we could do better, so.
Yeah, I'm the most special person in this podcast, in more ways than one.
Yeah, like Jay Sensei, if anybody wants to be on the next podcast, let us know, you know. We tried to keep this one a bit more kind of on topic with the Thousand Souls discussion in the future. Now we've got that out of the way, we'll probably kind of keep it a bit more free-for-all and we'll see who the guest is and kind of go from there. But, yeah, it'll be pretty exciting to get some of you guys in the chat.
All right.
And, I do want to say thank you guys for having me. I was actually looking forward to this quite a bit and actually attempted to be professional. I tried.
Dude, no.
I tried to edit, but it didn't work. And for that, I'm sorry.
Sure. No, it's good to have you on, man. It's always good to get LPA members on. And like I say, if anybody, you know, wants to join in, just let us know. I think we've got a thread in the announcements. In the feedback.
Can I interrupt you for a second, Joe?
Yeah, sure.
Sora, you asked when Mr. Han's movie is coming out. I do want to let you know. About 2 years ago, we had an interview with Joe for LPA. If you're referring to King Rat, that movie has unfortunately been discontinued. Joe had trouble getting it funded by major studios, so he just decided to put it on the shelf for now. So, Which one are you referring to then, Story? The seed's already out. It's been out for a while. If you go to iTunes and type in the seed, you can actually download it. It's a very good movie. But yeah, I thought you were talking about. By the way, that was my cell phone that was vibrating for the record there.
I was going to say, I hope it was your phone.
No, it's a phone, but it's very strategically placed.
And all the attempts to keep this conversation professional went out the window. Thank you.
I need to say one last thing, though. Club Tattoo. Metallica!
Club Tattoo!
If anybody didn't listen to this, Sirius... Octane interview. Go and do that now. So this last 2 minutes made sense.
Okay, but all seriousness, you guys were waiting for us to announce who the winner of the Hot Topic contest was today. We are ready to announce it. We received quite a few entries, over 200 entries. So thank you to everybody who entered. We really appreciate it. We've done the random talk, random selection, and the winner of the contest is no other than, can't even pronounce his screen name, M. Crack.
I think it's M. Crack. I think he has been on my books.
Formerly known as M. Starsky on the forums. He's out of the Bronx, New York, and he won the contest, so if you're listening in here, congratulations.
Congrats, M. Crack. You get a t-shirt and a CD, DVD.
So we're going to be contacting you later on to let you know. But good job on winning the contest. You know,
Thanks to everybody who entered. We've got more contests lined up. We'll probably be doing some more in the future.
We're actually gonna auction off for charity a date with a suicide girl. So
sorry, we're not doing that. I don't think.
Oh, that's just my wish. Then you know. Sorry.
You in a wig and lipstick does not classify as a suicide girl, Derek. Just so.
I thought it does. I'm insulted, Joe.
Put your pants back on and take off the funk.
But it's better without him.
God, man.
And on that note, I think we're done.
Would you get naked?
And you guys were saying I was at risk of being going too far. You guys went as far as I did, even farther than I did, without contributing at all. Like, I'm at the line. You are so far out that it has become a dot in the distance. You did not need my help at all to make this podcast the sickest, grossest thing ever. Good job.
Dude, I think we've done pretty well. Stop fapping.
I'm clapping, not fapping. Clapping. All right, so anyways, I think we've definitely...
Yeah, you've lost us.
You've lost us.
Sora asks, when will the next podcast be?
Next month, if we can. We're going to do one next month if we can.
Yeah, we've got some guests lined up in the pipeline, so hopefully we can get some awesome interviews and some awesome podcasts going.
Is somebody more excited?
Maybe we'll interview Derek about his thongs, if not.
Yeah. We're going to tune in next week for the special thong edition of the podcast. We're going to be talking to Derek about his thongs, his wigs, what kind of corners he likes to hang out on, and you know,
if you had me naked, I'd want more, right?
We only got to use that sound for like twice the whole podcast.
And on that note, I don't think there's anything else we need to say. I think we basically said all we need to say about the album. We do appreciate all you guys coming out tonight. It was
Big
thanks to everybody who showed up. This podcast will be online for download. And
heavily censored.
And it will be censored. We're going to go uncensored because we're awesome like that. So we'll probably have in about the next 2 hours or so.
We'll put up download and announce officially M Crackers the winner on the front page, I think, for the contest.
Yeah, and you know, definitely, you know, this was different. This was a roundtable discussion. In the future, we will be having more of a structured podcast like what you saw with Adam Wynn for the first podcast. We're trying to get some really cool guests. You know, no guarantees, but we're trying to do what we can. But just thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Unless everybody...
Mario.
Say it again?
Mario.
The Simpsons.
Mario.
It's a big molly.
Does not know how to pronounce it.
I need a flock of the Mario.
Yeah, we're going out. This is where we're going out.
We'll also be putting up a separate MP3 of Menace's rendition of Black Art in the Mario.
Wait. Okay, all right. If we're gonna be talking about Mario before we go, I just gotta give love to the underwater theme. If you guys are nerds, you know which one I'm talking about.
What? I have no idea what. What?
It's when Mario's swimming and I said it right that time, and when he's swimming, and he goes.
Oh.
Did it? Did it? Did it?
Wait, was he swimming in the smoke? No,
that's not when he's swimming.
That's the underground theme. Dude.
That's the underground theme. Yes, I fail.
Oh. God.
Fail us. God.
Mario, underwater theme. Get the fuck out of this podcast.
The underground theme for Mario is actually a Link Park song.
On the official recording, because we're basically talking about bullshit. So, all right. So, with that in mind, we are going offline now. We do appreciate you guys, you know, stopping by.
Thank you.
And we hope that you guys come by for the future podcast, and thank you for joining. And
Metallica!
Woo!
Club Tattoo.
All right, Club Tattoo, we're going offline, guys. All right.
Martin Luther King.
Bye-bye.
See you later, guys. Thanks a lot.